I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Real Salt Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Hey, this is Cleon Wall of the Jazz Notes podcast. After we recorded the podcast, I'm talking about Sam Farnsworth and myself. Team USA played again, and they lost to Serbia 94-89. So losing that fifth place, maybe not that big of a deal. Not a great way to finish the tournament for Donovan Mitchell. He ended up with 9 points in the final game, but he was only 4-for-12 from the field, 1-for-4 from the three-point line. He did get 5 rebounds and 4 assists. But here's what I will say about this, and I will never waver from this. I will not take anything away from his experience with Team USA, except for the fact that he still needs to be a more consistent shooter. And I think he's going to get that this season with the Utah Jazz because he's going to have more consistent shooters around him. How does that make him a better shooter? Maybe he doesn't take so many crazy shots. Maybe he works on his shot a little bit more. We'll just kind of have to wait and see this upcoming season. But anyway, I just wanted to get that out to you, that in full disclosure, that we taped this before the fifth place game between USA and Serbia. With that all said, on to the show. All right, welcome into another Jazz Notes podcast. My name is Cleon Wall. Sam Farnsworth joining me here again. You can, of course, download the Jazz Notes podcast, or at least listen to it, I should say, on KSLSports.com. And we are powered by KSLSports.com. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts and other fine podcast providers. I don't think we're on Stitcher, though, Sam. So someone asked me that recently. Hey, where can I find this? Is it on Stitcher? And I'm like, yeah. And I went and I checked. And I'm like, no. But other fine podcast providers do provide the Jazz Notes podcast. And I appreciate Sam joining me here today. The leading story. Yeah. You could either say yes or no or whatever you want to say. And this happened hours and hours ago.
Right.
And that's that Team USA loses to France. And the reason you would want to say yes is because Rudy Gobert played fantastic in this game. Mm-hmm. 21 points, 16 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal, and 3 blocks in this game, including a very important block on Donovan Mitchell late in the game that kind of sealed it for Team France. So I guess that's the good thing, right?
Yeah, you know, so for a Team USA basketball fan, I guess you can be disappointed if you want. But for me, overall, the expectation level, Team USA is always expected to win. But when the best players in the world that hail from America decide not to play in this tournament, it kind of takes a little bit of the, excitement out of it, I guess you can say. So them losing, it's kind of like, okay, it's not like we lost with our best players out there. We had great players, though. For me, what I've been loving about this whole tournament in general, it's like a Utah Jazz showcase. Ingles with Australia, they advanced to the semifinals also. Gobert advancing to the semifinals with France. Donovan Mitchell balling out in this game against France, too. 29.6 boards. I mean, hey, this has been great for the three Jazz players in this tournament to really, get kind of the Jazz name out there. I don't know if that's necessarily needed, but to see them getting high quality basketball in the off season like this, I mean, I can't think of a better way to prepare for the upcoming season than playing in this tournament, the FIBA World Cup.
And I agree with you. Going back to Rudy, just real quick, because I have plenty of other thoughts about Team USA. Going back to Rudy, just real quick, he really again showed why he is so valuable this team. Because I think a lot of people, I've talked to some Jazz fans here, just here in the station, here at KSL, and some say, you know, should we keep Derek Favors and get rid of Gobert? Because Favors is just, you know, and they'll give their reasons why. Yeah. And I keep saying, no, he is so good on defense.
Yes.
Think of how many points he saves in any number of games. Yeah, he's going to get beat every once in a while. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not going to look good every single game. I get that. Mm-hmm. But he is so valuable on defense. And you saw that against Team USA, because Team USA really didn't have a guy that could match up with Rudy in this game. And no, he's not going to have every game where he's scoring 21 points. Most games, he's probably going to score somewhere between 10 and 14 for the Jazz or something along that. And most of those are going to be lob dunks or something close to the basket. But I think what you see here is how valuable he is and how valuable he is to this Utah Jazz team, not just Team France, but to this Utah Jazz team, because he is really the man when it comes to defense. Yes. The Jazz can gamble so much on a defense in some ways, but you've always got that guy behind him, and they really do need competent defenders. They can become the top defensive team, I think, this next season, if they can just be competent this next year out on the perimeter.
Yeah, Rudy Gobert's a game changer. I mean, he changes the way other teams play offense, period. And I know the NBA is not necessarily a post-up, roll-to-the-basket type game anymore. It's much more of a shooter's game and a playmaker's game. But there's still some of the best playmakers in the league that want to get to the hoop, Donovan Mitchell being one of them. Prime example, right? Luckily, he doesn't play against Rudy in the NBA.
Very true.
But Rudy Gobert changes the way those guys try to get to the basket. Russell Westbrook, you know, he struggles when he's against the Jazz, when he's got to go to Gobert. I mean, he's just a total game changer. And I'm still a believer that if the Jazz needed him to be a scorer, he could become a scorer. It's a different type of scorer, but he could. He showed it earlier in his career, but now that he's kind of figured out what his role is with Quinn Snyder, he doesn't have to score, but he can when he's needed to. So Rudy Gobert is such a valuable guy.
I'm going to speak off the cuff a little bit here because I have no numbers to back this up. But Team USC was one of the worst shooting teams out there. And by the way, that's not Donovan's strength either. I want to get more to Donovan here in a second. But if we're just going to talk about Team USA, the one thing that has just made me wonder, even through all of this dominance, I keep thinking to myself, why is it that they don't get more shooters on Team USA? It seems like they default to, here are the best players in the world, and all of them are kind of the same type of player. Does that make sense? Like LeBron.
It's true.
Maybe James Harden would have been the one guy that you could say he's a little bit of both. But you look at LeBron, you look at Kobe, and those guys were guys that scored closer to the basket more often. They weren't great shooters.
Right.
I've never understood why Team USA doesn't say, okay, we got our guy like LeBron. Mm-hmm. We got our guy like KD. And by the way, he's a good shooter too. But why don't they just designate like two or three players that you're saying, okay, you're our snipers? Because you see what snipers can do in this FIBA basketball tournament. And Team USA just, they didn't have the guys out there who were great shooters. And I just don't understand why they couldn't go to like two or three really good shooters and say, you're our guy for this tournament because we're going to need some outside shooting.
And I'm not sure, you know, I don't have the info in front of me either. I'm not sure how many players had invitations or a chance and decided they weren't going to play. And, you know, injuries came up. Obviously, a guy like Klay Thompson, I don't know if he would have played even if he was fully healthy, but
he would, and he's a perfect example.
Exactly,
right there.
Those are the kind of guys that they need on this team to be a little more, to make a little more of a difference. They do need some of those guys, and then they didn't have them. They have a lot of guys who are great at one-on-one basketball, but that didn't help them.
As you mentioned, Donovan Mitchell, 29 points, led the team, 6 rebounds, one of the team leaders, 4 assists, one of the team leaders, 2 steals, one of the team leaders on this in this game. He showed you everything of who he can be. And more. Again, I think Jazz fans, please understand, he's not LeBron James.
Right.
He's not Kevin Durant. But boy, is this guy, can he just light it up in some games? That's number one. You've got a great athlete. But number two, you've got a leader and someone who has a wonderful personality. If this team really needs to, I understand that Rudy Gobert is Rudy Gobert, and you do build around him, and you need to build guys who can score off of him, and you have that in Donovan Mitchell. Now you need to find shooters. They seem to have found shooters. if Donovan Mitchell can be this guy, can be this type of a leader, can be this type of a scorer, I know he's not going to do this all the time, but if he can be this type of a guy, the type of guy we've seen in this tournament, I can see this team possibly making the Western Conference Finals. It seems like team-wise, they have everything around them. They don't have the stars, maybe, that you're maybe looking for, or the star power that you're thinking about, but it just gives you more hope for what you've seen from Donovan this tournament. And that doesn't mean he's always shot well either, but he has just shown you everything of what it's like to be a star in this league and to be a respected star in this league.
And for me, to be given the reins of a leadership role from Greg Popovich, that says a lot about Donovan Mitchell and the trust he's gained from one of the all-time great head coaches in the NBA in such a short amount of time this summer. I'm excited to see what Donovan learns from whatever he's learned, the experience that he's taking from this, how he applies it when he comes back to Salt Lake City for the Jazz, and how he'll apply that leadership and maybe even some of the skills that he's added in this tournament to this team with a veteran leader coming over too, and Mike Conley. So it's going to be so much fun. And I was just counting down the days from the day of this recording. It's 3.5 weeks until the Jazz first preseason game already. And so here we go. It's not going to be too much longer before we see these guys getting on the floor together again.
The other thing I want to say about Donovan is there's been a lot of kind of gripes and complaints, like, I can't believe so many guys pulled out of this tournament. And we're talking some of the best guys. And again, we'll go back to your James Hardens and some of those other guys. On the other hand, would Donovan have had the experience he would have had? He may have made the team, but would he have had the experience he needed to have if all those guys had shown up? Yes,
no doubt.
It's a little bit of a blow for USA basketball that they lose to France and they're going to end up playing for fifth place against Serbia. Or do you just kind of say to yourself, we'll take a hit for right now, especially if you're a Jazz fan, but we're looking at the future of Donovan Mitchell, and it's good that he got as much playing time as he did.
100% agree. And not only that, if you want to look ahead for the future of Team USA basketball as well, Donovan Mitchell has now kind of established himself as a future leader of this team. So even next summer when they're in the Olympics and you've got maybe LeBron coming back to play or Harden or whoever some of these other guys are, Donovan's coming back as kind of, with Greg Popovich, is kind of, hey, this was my team a year ago type thing. Greg Popovich knows. I would be interested to see the type of leadership role that takes a year from now even. And I think like you said, he may have been on that team no matter what, but it's going to be a totally different role because of the experience he had this summer.
So does he make the Olympic team next year? Because they did qualify for the Olympics. That's my big question is he going to be on Team USA next summer when they are playing in Tokyo?
I think it's, I mean, maybe this is a biased opinion, but I think it's no doubt. I don't see how there's, is it 15-man roster, 12-man, whatever it is?
12.
I don't see how there's that many more players better than Donovan Mitchell to put on Team USA's roster. And again, going back to everything that Greg Popovich has probably learned about him this summer, he trusts him. We are seeing, and we've been seeing it in Utah, but we are starting to see an international star in the making here.
Personality-wise, I say yes. Ability-wise, I guess we can actually say, let's wait and see. Let's see what happens at the end of this season, because it may be a no-brainer. Right now, I'm just kind of like, there's so many other guys.
I mean,
Steph Curry.
Exactly.
You've got James Harden.
Right. Westbrook. You
think of all these guys players, that you're like, can Donovan fit on this team?
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe he finagles his way, depending on his play this next year, and because of the goodwill he had with Greg Popovich.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The other thing we wanted to talk about today is we're talking about the best, the top five of all time of the Utah Jazz at each position. We've covered the shooting guards. We've covered the point guards. Today, we're covering the small forwards. And this one, I will have to say, was the most difficult for me. We went 1-5 the first time. Then we went 5-1 the last time when shooting guards. I kind of like the 5-1 thing so we can end up with who is number one. So we're going to go with number five first. Who was your number five?
So number five for me, I'm going to go with Joe Ingles, who's currently on the roster. So he's going to be my number five. Obviously, we know what he does. He's got a great shooting touch. He's a great complement to, Donovan and Rudy and now Mike Conley. I think it's going to be a great fit there as well. So he's my number five right now.
I'm going to go my number. Maybe I'm just not giving Joe enough credit. But believe me, anyone who's listened to this podcast, they know how much I love Joe, and they know how much I think he is a valuable asset to this team. I decided to go with Matt Harpring.
Okay.
The reason why I went with Matt Harpring is just because he's hard-nosed. If he played in today's game, he'd probably be a power forward.
Yeah, you're right.
But he's a hard-nosed guy. He averaged 12 points a game, basically, 11.9 points a game while playing for the Jazz, about 5 rebounds a game. Who knows how many floor burns he probably had or little injuries just because he was that type of a player. But he also was a decent scorer. He scored 18 points one season, 16 points the following season back in like 02-03 and then 03-04. I'd probably put him as my number five just because he was that hard-nosed individual. He was never going to be mistaken for the guy who was ever going to be a number one option. But he exuded being a Jazz man.
Yeah.
That tough guy who went out on the floor and he did everything he could to try and help the Utah Jazz win. I really like Joe Ingles. I'm going to stick with Matt Harpring.
Okay.
By next season, kind of like what we talked about with Donovan Mitchell being the best shooting guard. By next season, I probably should put Joe into my top five. All right, so we move on to number four. By the way, I just wanted to let everyone know out there, I know Sports Illustrated has put out their top 100 players. I understand that.
Right.
That's going to be coming in a later podcast. We're going to talk about each of the Utah Jazz that are in the top 100. And yes, they have plenty of guys in the top 100.
Yeah.
So, but we're still concentrating right now on the top small forwards of all time for the Utah Jazz. My number four is going to be Brian Russell. Why is Brian Russell my number four on this list? Well, he took pride in defense. Just interviewed him, by the way. You can go back and listen to his interview that I did with him when he was out doing the junior jazz tour in the state of Utah and also in the state of Nevada. He prided himself on defense. He worked his way into the starting lineup. He stayed, I'm going to say this, he stayed within his lane. He didn't try to do too much for his skill or his ability. He basically did what he needed to do to be good and cohesive in a starting lineup. He was, what am I trying? I had one other good thing. He only averaged 9 points a game during his career, but during the height of his career, he was one of the guys that helped to lead the Jazz to two Western Conference Finals, winning those Western Conference Finals and going to the NBA Finals. Yes, he will always be remembered in Utah Jazz lore and across the whole nation as the guy Michael Jordan pushed off to sink the game-winning shot in Game 6 of the 1998 Finals. But in reality, he was a good, solid, small forward with the Utah Jazz. He did whatever they wanted him to do, and that's why I put Brian Russell at number four.
So I had a slightly hard, I don't know what the right adjective there is, a more difficult time than some of my others, I guess, to for my three and my four, which would be which. And my number four is also going to be Brian Russell. So I really like Brian Russell for a lot of the same reasons that you said. I will mention, obviously, as a defender, he was the Jazz's lockdown guy during those years. That's why he was guarding Jordan. That's why he would guard the other team's best ball handler. You know, he was a great defender. I think maybe even an underrated defender at times. He was the fourth scoring option, really, on a team that had great scores. I think he could have scored a lot more, but they didn't need him to. On occasion, he'd pop for 20, 25 points, though. He could do that. But really, that wasn't his what he was needed to do. He was out there to really play defense and then to shoot. He could shoot. Even though when Hornacek came in, Hornacek was the primary shooter, Brian Russell became a solid, respectable three-point shooter. And I think, I want to say at one point, did he have the career? I probably should have looked this up. The career Jazz three-point leader at one point, or maybe it was for a single season. I can't remember. And then Hornacek, obviously, and it's changed a lot since then. There's been a lot of great shooters on this team, but I will go with Brian Russell as well at number four. He, for me, will always have a special place in Jazz history because he was a key part of the franchise that went to back-to-back finals.
He ended up making 685 career three-pointers.
That's a good shooter.
So, yeah, that's a pretty good shooter. And when he played for the Jazz, three-point percentage, not great his first season, but as he kept going along, actually his best season was the season of 1999 to 2000. He ended up shooting pretty much 40% that season, but he hovered right around, in 96-97 was his best season. He actually shot 41% from the field, or at least from three-point land. So, yeah, he's he always has a special place in my heart because mm-hmm. he did whatever the Jazz needed yes. him to do to try and win. He probably could have gone to other teams. Brian Russell was never going to be a number one guy. He was never going to be a number two guy. He may have been able to be a number three guy mm-hmm. somewhere, but he was happy in Utah, and he was happy being number four yeah. and playing with good teammates. And he just, you know, he still has a good relationship with the franchise, even though he didn't finish career with his franchise, right. with the Utah Jazz franchise. Who do you have at number three? You said you had a difficult time deciding yeah. who to put at number three and who to put at number four. Who is at number three for you?
And honestly, at first thought, he wasn't even in my top five, this guy. But realistically, when you break it down and look at it, he had to be there. And number three for me is Gordon Hayward. And
we agree on that. Yeah. That's what I have number two and number three.
And I know, you know, with the way he left this franchise, that's probably the way he's always going to be remembered in Utah, is the way he left this team, kind of a sour way that he did it. And you know what, though? Before he left, I mean, I was living in Colorado and I saw all the pictures of the billboards, the stay word, and that's how bad the Jazz wanted him. And this is how big of an impact he had on this team. Could you imagine, and I know ifs and buts are candy nuts and all that stuff, but if Donovan Mitchell didn't become the surprise that he became, that the Jazz got, we still might be reeling from the loss of Gordon Hayward in Utah. Maybe, right?
Yeah.
He was that big of an impact player, helping the Jazz get back to the playoffs, win a playoff series. So Gordon Hayward for me is number three, yeah.
Okay. I put him at number three. Here's my question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Let me run off some stats here for you. His last three seasons in Utah, I'll just go scoring here. Last three seasons in Utah, 19.3 points a game,
mm-hmm.
19.7 points a game,
yes.
21.9 points a game. I mm-hmm. believe that was his last season was his All-Star year.
Mm-hmm.
Shot very well from three. Would he, if he would have remained in Utah, maybe not the rest of his career, but at least, let's say he signed another three-year deal or four-year deal.
Right.
Is he the number one small forward? Do you think, would he be at the top of this list if he stayed in Utah?
I think a lot of it would have depended on what the result of the past couple of seasons would have been with the Jazz. You know, if let's say those numbers stay the same, that's a big key. But for me, it's also, you know, are they still going to the playoffs and things like that? So he would, it's still pretty hard to get past the two that I have in my top two, but he'd probably be pushing for at least the number two spot on my list.
Okay. I
don't know that he would be at the top yet.
I would say that he would have been number one for me if he, and I agree with you, if he would have at least stayed right around there. So mm-hmm. he averaged about 22 points a game his last season.
Yeah.
If he would have averaged 22 to 24 points a game in the next three or four seasons for the Utah Jazz, and the Jazz would have kept going to the playoffs during those seasons,
mm-hmm.
I think he would have been number one.
Yeah.
Because to me, he was a good all-around player that really developed into a good scorer. I never, ever thought Gordon Hayward was ever going to be a top banana on the Utah Jazz or the guy. I always thought they need to find someone else, and I think he'll blossom if they find someone else who can help him out a lot. I never thought he was going to be that guy, but I always thought he was going to be a really good, solid contributor. And it's been rehashed or whatever you want to say about why he left. But I think if he would have stuck around,
mm-hmm.
I think he would have been the best Utah Jazz small forward of all time. But because of what happened and how he left, I really can't get above number three for him right now.
Yeah.
Even though he gave the Utah Jazz, he really kind of led the Jazz. The Jazz decided to rebuild with him,
mm-hmm.
and he helped lead them back to the playoffs. You cannot deny that. No matter how he left or the sour taste you have in your mouth about him,
mm-hmm.
he led the Jazz back to the playoffs. I know Rudy Gobert's part of that too.
Right.
But without Gordon Hayward, they're not going to make it.
Right.
And so I think he is a solid number three. And it's like we've talked mm-hmm. about with all these others. What could have been? With Gordon Hayward, it's the what could have been if you would have just stayed in Salt Lake.
Right.
But on the other hand, as Jeremiah Jensen's argued before, if he would have stayed, you know, would we have seen the blossoming of Donovan Mitchell?
Exactly.
At least that early.
Yeah.
Would we have seen that? Because if not, you're thinking playoffs, you're thinking Gordon at the two or at the three, Joe Ingles at the two or the three. How much playing time is Donovan Mitchell going to get?
You know, and overall, I think it's it's hard because at that time when he signed and just chose Boston, you're thinking the sky's the limit for this Jazz franchise. They have a chance to contend in the next season or two.
Yeah.
But just that instant blossoming of Donovan Mitchell. And so for me, man, I think the Jazz are in a better place now with Donovan becoming the superstar he is, perfect face for this franchise with Rudy, than even if I want to say what if with Gordon Hayward. I think the Jazz are in a better spot now than Gordon Hayward two seasons later with the Jazz too. But I don't know. That's the hard part, trying to read into the future and predict the all that too. But
I think our number two and our number one are going to be the same guys.
Probably.
But I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll go with my number two, and that's we'll see it. Where he lists up. I put Adrian Dantley at
okay.
number two.
Okay.
And this one was a hard one for me because mm-hmm. my number two, let me just reveal my number one
yeah.
also.
Mm-hmm.
My number one's Andre Kirilenko.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why Dantley is number two and not number one is because he was really only focused on one end of the floor.
That's true.
But he was fantastic mm-hmm. on that end of the floor, as long as you could get over some things that were going on there. And what I mean by that is, think about this. He averaged 29.6 points a game
right.
in seven seasons for the Jazz. He averaged 3 assists a game. He averaged about 6 rebounds a game. 4 of his seasons with Utah, he averaged 30 points or more.
Right.
You just look at those raw stats and you're thinking, holy cow, this guy was a scoring machine for the Jazz.
Right.
But here's what you had to deal with Adrian Dantley. He was an interesting personality. He did not get along with Frank Layton.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't play good defense.
Right.
His offense was all around the basket. Everything was 10 feet in. And imagine that as a small forward. Again, fantastic at that end, but that was really all his offense. And on top of all that, he was a black hole. Once he got
yeah.
the ball,
yep.
he was that guy that
yes.
never usually... Now, I'm sitting there saying he averaged 4 assists a season. Or what? Yeah, 4 assists. I'm sorry, 3 assists a season. So
mm-hmm.
I know that wasn't the case, but it sure felt that way.
Mm-hmm.
Once the ball went to Adrian Dantley, you knew he was going to put the ball up unless they doubled him.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of hard to get an offensive flow when everything is flowing through Adrian Dantley.
Yeah.
So when I look at the scoring portion of it, that's why he's at number two and probably should have been at number one. But the reason why he's knocked down a little bit
mm-hmm.
is because he wasn't that all-around player like Andre Kirilenko was. Who was your number two?
Yeah, so and you bring up some great points about Adrian. And for me... You talk about how he was focused on one end of the floor. He's also kind of focused about one person,
yeah,
and that was himself.
Exactly.
Too.
Good point.
And so you make these arguments that are making me rethink things because I have Andre Kirilenko number two.
Okay, that's fine.
What AK 47 did here in a Jazz uniform, I mean, he could barely speak English, but he became this endearing fan favorite with the way he played. He always hustled. He never made excuses. He went out there, became an all-around player. He created that 5x5 stat that we talk about, you know. He was an all-star for the Jazz when the Jazz maybe had no business having an all-star, for a couple of years. He was the season after Karl Malone went to L.A. and John Stockton retired, and everyone was saying the Jazz are going to win 5, 6, 7 games this year, and they're going to totally be irrelevant. They go 42-40 because they have a great coach in Jerry Sloan, and they have a hustler in Andre Kirilenko leading the way for a team that should have been in the dumps, and they almost made the playoffs. And that reinvigorated a fan base saying, we do have a future here. They signed a few key free agents, and a couple of seasons later, they're back in the Western Conference Finals. But Andre Kirilenko, for me, is just one of those guys that kind of embodies what the Utah Jazz are. And I think Jerry Sloan kind of made that image of just the hustle, hard work, no excuses type guy, and that's Andre Kirilenko.
I guess that's why I put Andre at number one. This one, to me, the top two were so different because you had one guy that was such a good scorer and
right.
a pure scorer.
Yeah.
And he did help the Jazz in the playoffs, but
yes.
eventually, after drafting Karl Malone
right.
and because of probably problems with Frank Layton,
mm-hmm.
they decided to get rid of him. And he ended up going to Detroit and
right.
doing great things for them.
Mm-hmm.
But then they traded him away
yeah.
too, and then they won a title the next season. Now, there were a lot of other things that were going into that.
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Right, yeah.
But But he was just good enough to be that guy that he was really good scorer for the Jazz. I think, to be honest with you, his number deserves to be in the rafters.
Yeah.
His number does. But I just can't put him at number one just because of the few deficiencies that I see there. Andre, now I'll go off of Andre. Me with Andre, I had to put him at number one because he was Mr. Everything to everybody. The only thing he wasn't was a big-time scorer.
Yeah.
But looking at him now, I will say, kind of like we talked about, I believe, in previous podcasts, what would it be like if Andre Kirilenko played now for the Utah Jazz?
Mm-hmm.
I think he might be an all-star because he does a little bit of everything, and you could actually probably put him at the four, too, and he would succeed there. To me, Andre always would have been better at the four. But he played the three. He did what he could do. He had block shots. Most of his good defense sometimes was off ball.
Right, yes.
But he was such a good and integral player for this team. It would have been nice. Again, the what might have been, it sure would have been nice to see him with some different players. But he really elevated that team and helped them to stay relevant when they could have really gone down the tubes. That's why I put him at number one. Mm-hmm. He was, as you said, 5x5. He was the Swiss Army knife.
Yep.
He was that guy that you could count on going out there and giving it his all every single night. And it sure would have been nice to see what he could have done if he would have had some better scores around him or different players around him. So that's why I put Andre at number one. Mm-hmm. And let me just, I'll throw this one stat out at you. He averaged 1.8 blocks during his career, or at least during his Jazz career. He averaged 3.3 in 2004-05. In 2005-06, he averaged 3.2 blocks.
Yeah.
That was probably the most exciting part for me for Andre Kirilenko's were alley-oops and block shots, and he was a small forward.
Those long arms.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a bridge between eras when the Jazz needed a bridge bad, because where were we going to go after 20 years of Stockton and Malone, you know? And he really helped, as you mentioned, I mentioned, it really helped kind of bridge this franchise into a new direction where there was still hope for the future. For me, Adrian Dantley was number one for... You know, obviously the ability he had to score, his ability to how he did kind of help the Jazz take those first steps to the playoffs. Six-time All-Star, I think, goes without saying that there's a lot of respect for him outside of Utah as well. So there was a lot of national respect for Adrian Dantley and his ability on the basketball floor. If he could have maybe had a humility check or something when they decided Karl Malone was going to be the future scorer here, could you imagine if he had that in him somewhere where he could have been like, you know what, I can be the number two scorer. Let's let this young guy take over. And you had those two with Stockton. Who knows? Maybe they would have shot up the playoff charts a lot earlier than they did in the 90s. You know, who knows? I mean, again, we're playing the who knows, ifs and buts game.
Yeah.
But for me, that's kind of, I sort of take that into consideration a little bit. But overall, just I think what maybe sullies his image a little bit in Utah is the fact that there was that grudge between him and Larry Miller, and both sides held on to it for so long, so much longer than it needed to be. And when they finally kind of smooth things over and they put his jersey up, by then it's a little too late, because by the time his jersey goes up, a lot of the Jazz fans are like, I don't even know who Adrian Dantley is.
Yeah.
You know, you have to research to find out. But and I guess maybe that's one reason why I'm putting him up there, because he was that great of a player for an organization that was in such a small market. He was kind of a shining star.
Here's another reason, as you were talking, I thought of that he should or could be the number one guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, he was 6'5", maybe really only 6'4".
Mm-hmm.
But my goodness, could he score around the basket?
Yeah.
He had an array of moves that would befuddle so many different players out there. And we're talking guys that were taller than him. He was so solid when it came to 10 feet and in. And you might sit there and snicker at that when you think of the NBA today, where everything, well, not everything, I'm overgeneralizing, but where a lot of the game is played out on the perimeter and out at the three-point line. He was so valuable to this team because of what he could do 10 feet and in. And let me tell you, Adrian Dantley, if you gave him the ball and you said, go get a basket, he's one guy that I personally would say, he'll go get a basket.
Right.
That's how good he was.
Yeah.
So that's why I would say he could be this one I will have to say, this list was so difficult for me.
It was hard.
Because there was no clear cut number one guy out there.
I agree.
Stockton's easy to pick out. when we do talk about power forwards, that one's easy to pick out too.
Right.
Those are the two easiest ones that you can pick out. There's no clear number one out there. This one was so tough because I think that the Jazz have had really good forwards, but there's always been the, they're really good, or at least they're good, but, and then you have to throw that addendum in there, and that's what you have to do. So, Sam, any honorable mentions that you wanted to throw out there?
Well, Harpring was one of them.
Okay.
He was on my bubble list there. David Benoit for me is just because when I was a kid, he was kind of became my favorite when I was in high school there. I even bought a Benoit jersey. I thought he was going to be the next big thing, and then it ended up kind of being Brian Russell overtaking that. So, but from a sentimental standpoint, David Benoit was a small forward that I took into consideration. But when you stack it up against the rest of these guys, it's like, he doesn't have any business being in the top five.
My honorable mention, I guess he played a little shooting guard. He played a little small forward, and that's probably Shandon Anderson. He's probably more of a shooting guard.
Shandon Anderson was good. Yeah.
Shandon Anderson, he barely played for the Jazz, but man, was he a lot of fun when he came in with the second unit. And he's another guy that played, everything was 10 feet in for him.
He could have gone down with some great moments in Jazz history. I remember him missing critical bunnies in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I swear it was against Portland. Deep in the playoffs, and he's missing wide open layups, and I'm just going, what are you doing? But that's a good pick. I like Shannon.
The other one that this is not an honorable mention, but as you were sitting there talking about David Benoit, Chris Morris flashed into my mind. And do you know why Chris Morris? Because it seemed like he had all the ability in the world, and he just never lived up to it. But to say,
that's right.
He was the one guy that was, if he shot from the top of the key, you're probably thinking he's going to bank. If he's going to make it, he's going to bank that baby in. And I know it didn't happen all the time, but those are my memories of Chris Morris. So thanks a lot, Sam, for joining me. Those are our best small forwards coming up soon. We're going to talk about the best power forwards, and we'll talk about the top 100 NBA athletes according to Sports Illustrated and where the Utah Jazz fall. That's going to be coming up before the weekend, so make sure you download that podcast too. Thanks for listening to this one. We'll talk to you soon.
Two years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America. But this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Smartin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.